Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this 3rd of March. It's very nice to have you with us. It is our roundtable panel. Let me introduce the panel to you and then remind you of how you can join in the discussion. It's fairly specific, but you'll learn. We begin with WAMC's Alan Chartok, who joins us from the confines of his prison in Great Barrington, where he is getting better from a broken ankle and has been ordered to stay put. So, but we're thrilled that through modern technology, he can at least be with us in voice and spirit. Good morning.
Hey, I'm getting used to this, Joe. I think I'd like it for the rest of the time. You know, you lie on the couch and you hold the microphone in your hand and your foot is up in the air and, you know, it's nice and you can watch all the Gunsmoke you can do.
Well, yeah, I've always thought you just have a dog at your feet, you know, that sounds good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all very good, especially on a windy, cold day. Well, good morning. Welcome. Rosemary Armeo is here as well. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
You're doing a cool event. Tell me about the cool event.
Oh, it is a cool event. It's a classic movie showing down at Page Hall. That's the downtown New Albany campus in Albany. And they're showing His Gal Friday with Cary Grant and the great Rosalind Russell. And that is a remake of The Front Page, which has been done multiple times since it came out in 1928. This version, however, features the star reporter as Rosalind Russell. Hildy is a woman. And it's very fun. So then a bunch of us are going to, real women journalists are going to talk about gender and journalism.
So
please come down.
It's you, Lydia Kolbita, Casey Seiler.
And Marion Roach-Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
So it should be very good.
Well, have a great time. That sounds very fun. 8 o'clock, is that tonight?
I'll look it up. Yeah, I think it's earlier than that.
Okay,
yeah,
I'll look it up.
It's like a 20-minute discussion group, and then we're going to go all watch the movie, and it's a new high-definition version of it.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Cool. Barbara Smith is with us. She is an author, an activist, and our dear friend. And Barbara, it's very nice to have you here.
Good morning, and I can say it's a great movie. I think I've seen it at least twice.
I know. I just love it.
Good stuff. All right. Well, let's talk about continuation of what we were talking about yesterday. You'll remember that we were talking about the Jeff Sessions issue and whether he should recuse himself or not. And then there was a lot of back and forth on Capitol Hill yesterday from both Republicans and Democrats of whether he should or whether he should resign. And the Trump administration and the president himself said, well, no, he shouldn't resign. He's fine. They felt confident in what he had done and that he was being truthful when he spoke to Senator Al Franken during his confirmation hearings. And then about an hour and a half later, he did step aside and recused himself from the investigation. Many questions still persist, and some are now the question that's being asked is what he did, is that enough? So that is the basic setup. So I will start there. And Alan, what do you make of all this?
Well, it's coming apart, that's for sure. Today we're being met with headlines that Jared Kushner too had things to do with the Russians.
Yes, sir.
We know that Trump himself had encouraged the Russians to participate in the WikiLeaks, and so there did seem to be at least a prima facie relationship between Trump and the Russians just from that. Once that ball of string starts coming apart, it's very hard to put, here's a mixed metaphor for you folks, to put the genie back in the bottle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Anna Navarro, who is a CNN commentator, said that she knew about the KKK tie to Jeff Sessions. She didn't know that there was a fourth K, which was Kremlin. So
cute.
But now, what do you do with this? What do you do with this information? And here's the question. And Rosemary, I was thinking about specifically asking you about this question because, from my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, for any member of the panel, but from my understanding, we're making a big fuss about this recusal of the investigation. It didn't seem that there was a really strident investigation taking place anyway.
No, which is something that an independent investigator could do. Here's the rub, though. The old independent prosecutor law that we know of, Watergate, that brought in people who were completely unconnected to Nixon, that law expired just before the 2000. And so now what happens is the attorney general is out, his deputy will do it, or his deputy's deputy. Both people, or all those people who have been selected, handpicked mm-hmm. by not just Sessions, but we know that Trump has a real hands-on policy about picking underlings. So you're still having someone who's connected to the whole regime will be in charge. Here's another story that's out this morning. The Wall Street Journal has found that he paid for his trip to meet the Russian ambassador out of, get this, his campaign fund. Remember, his excuse has been that, oh, yeah, yeah, I forgot to tell you about those meetings.
Because
but they were nothing. It was just connected to being—
Because I'm a senator.
Right. It was connected to being on the Armed Services Committee. But he paid for the trip, at which you also admitted that while we talked about Ukraine, which you will recall is the subject of the sanctions that he should not have been talking about, paid for it out of the campaign. This is my favorite part of the investigative reporting, when a report is out and they're scrambling to lie and they're messing it up even more. This guy's a lawyer, and he's up there talking in a press conference about potential perjury, and he's saying, I didn't do anything wrong. Next thing we hear is, well, you know, I should have been more careful and said this. Next thing he goes is, I wish I had said, if you are making concessions like that, you are saying, I perjured myself.
Mm-hmm.
So the Democratic calls, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, the Democratic calls for him to step back might not just be showmanship. There might actually be something to it. Go ahead.
Wanted to add one thing to Rosemary's list, and I'll shut up, and that is the FBI. You mentioned all of the chain of command in the Justice Department, but remember, the FBI has supposedly been conducting an investigation, and they report to the Justice Department also. And so therefore, and we know there's been some real problems with Comey and the way that he's behaved, the head of the FBI, up until now. So that is an even more dangerous part.
We don't know what the
Sorry,
heck
Barbara.
We don't know what the heck the FBI is doing. They went before the House Intelligence Committee yesterday, and the Republicans said, oh, it was great, a really productive meeting. The Democrats said they won't tell us anything. They're stonewalling. And we don't know what Jeff Sessions has told the FBI to do. He is the attorney general right now. What has he already done?
Yeah, that's right.
So,
Barbara.
I was just going to say, the fact that he paid for this trip out of his campaign fund, that says to me that it had non-governmental agendas and purposes, if you see what I'm saying. I say this to somebody who had a campaign fund because of
having
been in office.
There are rules about what to spend that money on.
Right. And the thing is, the fact that he chose to pay for it out of his campaign fund, that just really... Because to me, it's like campaign to campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But my general perspective about it is that we have a bunch of devils and moral idiots running the country at this point. And why should we be surprised when their lack of moral character rises to this level of a democratic crisis, democracy with a small d?
When you think of what happens next here, so the Democrats both the Republicans and Democrats are saying, some Republicans are saying that either he should resign fully, or at very least that there should be this special prosecutor. But as Alan said, this does seem to be unraveling. Rather quickly.
Yes.
And you do wonder with this new information if by the end of the day we'll have a new development.
We can. Yes.
Well, you know, when it gets closer, to you, and I'm talking about individuals who might get caught up in this, you're more likely to spill the beans than if you thought that you were off in the distance in a closet somewhere that nobody would know you were there. You might be starting to say, now's the time I ought to get out in front of this. And that is what you have to watch for.
So speaking of that, the one person who baffles me in all of this is Paul Ryan. I remain baffled by his reaction, who he continually says that there doesn't appear to be anything here that is out of the ordinary that can't be held by a straightforward investigation. For one, you've said, Alan, you know, I mean, obviously this is a guy who has great political ambition. He has had trouble both with this president, but also within his own party and in the leadership position. It seems, now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but given all of the other voices, it seems as though he's being somewhat tone deaf.
I read somewhere today, Joe, that some of the citizens in his congressional district have bought a gigantic roadside sign, which basically takes him to task. So he's got to be feeling some heat, not only in his two constituencies. One of them is obviously among his colleagues in the House, who, by the way, begged him to take the job when he didn't want to take it because he saw it was potentially fraught with danger. And with his constituents at home. Now, if I'm the Democrats, and I hardly don't think that I should be telling them what to do because I know they'll screw it up, but what they have to be pointing out here is that that this is a matter of different branches holding oversight over others, and that we don't have that right now. We don't have that balance of power. And if I'm running an election for Congress, that sure as heck is what I'm saying. You know, you guys better get out there and vote for some Democrats in order to, if there's going to be any accountability at all.
Rosemary?
I don't think I have anything to add. I think Alan's right.
Well, okay, mark that on the calendar.
Oh boy.
What happened? Let's take a break. We'll be right back. We'll continue our conversation after this short break.
Support for WAMT comes from Big Y, family-owned and operated market with 5 locations in the Berkshires, celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England. BigY.com. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar. Dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizer. Delivery expanding to Gilderland. 518-432-0358. And Beardsley Castle, offering weddings and dinner with farm-to-table American cuisine Thursday through Sunday in an 1860 Mohawk Valley castle, chef-owned for 22 years. BeardsleyCastle.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable panel at WAMC.org is our email address, and we welcome your letters and comments, panel at WAMC.org. I have to say I did watch the Jeff Sessions press conference yesterday and thought it to be, you know, and not to be overly critical, however, I have to say that one of the things that we heard during this whole process where Jeff Sessions was being confirmed was that the members of the Senate members who said that he was a great colleague and that was due this respect and so forth, I was sort of amazed by how he made a statement. It was fairly definitive, and then he just kept on talking and then unraveled the statement that he made. Did you see that, Rosemary? There were a couple of instances where he said, you know, I only met those times. Well, there may have been some other more times. There were two people in there. Okay, there may have been three or maybe five, but I don't.
That's the point of how extraordinary it was. The guy is a lawyer. And so if anyone should know what you say when you're facing the possible charges that he is, unless he's so confident he will never face them, you don't admit anything. You say, and he did this as well. I don't recall. I don't remember. I'm sure he said. And then he does that little, you know, Southern accent, homespun, cute story thing that makes me just want to slap him by the side of the head, you know, like, well, you know, they're just the ambassador's just a really gossipy guy. We were just talking about unimportant things. I'm sure anybody could have listened to us and not found anything. This is serious stuff. I'm glad Alan? He's in trouble.
I think you were right on the money. Rosemary, let me repay the compliment earlier to you. I think you're right on the money. His philosophy here, his approach, his communications approach is Johnny Anyman. I'm a Johnny Everyman.
Yeah.
I'm just a good old boy. And this is the way that we talk to each other. And if you're out there, you can have some sympathy for me because it's the way you would be talking. You don't remember everything that went on, you know. Mm. I'm just a good old boy, and I think I have to be honest with you. I think it's what elected Trump because people say, yeah, he's just a regular guy, you know. Oh. And so it's his approach.
Okay, so we really need to stop the train on this one. He may seem like a good old boy, you know, to you. Or to someone else, or to, you know, but as an African American, I hear that tone, I hear that manner, and the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well,
This is not the same with Trump.
But I think most people feel that way with it. I do think it, but it is a Southern boy act. But if you read into it, that's what's so troubling, especially given his history.
No, Joe, it's the Republican solid South. Solid South. I hear what Barbara's saying. Believe me, I do. But remember, you know, a Democrat can't get a toehold down there anymore because this is the way these guys act. And there's a certain code, Barbara. I'm still laughing about what you said before. You know, let's face it, they're just a bunch of devils.
You know, the Democrats are not doing themselves any favors. So what is it with Nancy Pelosi? This is a smart woman. She gets up and she goes, oh, we got to get rid of him. You know, Bill Clinton was impeached for far less. Thus turning the discussion from Sessions to what Bill Clinton did. Who is her crisis public relations person? She needs to hire Teresa, I think.
I can't.
Yes.
All right. Let's take a break there. We want to come back and we'll continue on this topic as well as many others. We got letters as well. Panel. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, Rosemary Armeo, and of course, your letters and comments. We'll continue our conversation on the roundtable panel right after this short break from the BBC. Good morning, all. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Barbara Smith join us. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We got some letters like this one from Dot, who says, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions is far too experienced an attorney to risk the serious penalties of perjury to cover up a small secret. A man of his credentials only does what he has done to cover up something big. Sessions clearly perjured himself multiple times orally during his hearings and in writing in his written responses. Sessions must resign.
Is that really his name?
Jefferson Beauregard Sessions.
Yes, that's it.
Two Confederate generals. Count them, two.
And I believe it was brought up, and the reason people use it is because he was often fond of referring to the former president as Barack Hussein Obama.
Right. To get that Muslim-sounding name, right.
The big secrets he and Flynn have lied to conceal must be exposed. Michael says, what does it matter if he's removed? They'll find another bigot to take his place.
I had the same thought.
Vincent says the top law enforcement official of the country committed perjury. He must resign. Don writes, when I worked at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Tennessee, I was required to obtain a security clearance. The clearance process entailed filling out a comprehensive form and was followed up by FBI inquiries. I can assure you that if I had lied on the form or I had misled the FBI, I would have not been granted a clearance. If a scientist at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory must be forthright, certainly, the Attorney General of the United States must be. Mr. Sessions should not continue to serve as Attorney General of the country if he cannot serve with integrity. Tom says, Alan, you called it several weeks ago when Trump was relentlessly criticizing the intelligence agencies that there would be payback when agents left with information that they knew would damage the president. I suggest they haven't waited but are more than willing to share leaks to get back and also that they genuinely believe that Trump is a threat to our country's well-being. Thoughts on that, Alan?
Yeah, well, it could be. Anything could be. You see, that's what happens when one of these things opens up this way, the ball of twine, as we've been talking about it this morning. Then people start coming up with theories. And all of those theories add up to an amalgam of real danger for the president. Let's not forget, how long has he been in office, Joe? How many
42
days?
Now?
42 days. Think about that. 42 days. And an Obama administration, which was, although we'll get letters on this, basically scandal-free, 42 days, and it's all just coming about everywhere you look. It's amazing.
We got this from Leslie, who says, Paul Ryan is corrupt and immoral as they come. For the GOP, it is all about power. The GOP of the Watergate era is long dead. And Steve takes Barbara to task for using the term devils. Really, Barbara? Ideological differences are one thing, but to call the members of an administration you don't align with devils is crossing a line. I think you feel there's more depth there.
Well, you have to have been there. thank you for your for your input, but
you had to be there. I like that. Okay, let's move on to some other things that are making news. Alan alluded to this though, but I don't want to. He mentioned it. I don't want to dismiss it entirely, and that is that Michael Flynn, then Donald Trump's incoming National Security Advisor, had a previously undisclosed meeting with the Russian ambassador in December. Jared Kushner, Mr. Trump's son-in-law and now a senior advisor, also participated in the meeting at Trump Tower with Mr. Flynn and the Russian ambassador. But among Mr. Trump's inner circle, it is Mr. Flynn who appears to have been the main interlocutor with the Russian envoy. The two were in contact during the campaign and the transition, and with the Russian ambassador and current and former American officials have stated. And this this latest meeting was actually disclosed by the White House, who said that the two met to, quote, establish a line of communication between the new administration and the Russian government, which is fairly in keeping with what they have said from the beginning. Do we need to make...
Well, that's Joe, that's exactly the point. Yesterday I advanced a new Shartakian theory, which is probably not right, but it's interesting anyway. If what the Russians were after was the destabilizing of democracy, right, and it was not specifically to elect Trump, although it looks like it was, it could be both. It does occur to me that what's going on here is they don't really care if Trump is solidified. They just want the chaos that comes out of this. Now, Kushner, you can fire almost anybody, but it would be very tough to fire your son-in-law, I'll tell you right now.
Yeah, that seems difficult. Rosemary?
I definitely think Putin wants to sow, if not destabilization of democracy, destabilization of the West. He loves it that Europe and the United States are fighting, that Europe is in disarray as much as the United States is. That's all good for him. But I do think there are financial ties between Trump and certain friends of Putin. That's how he runs a government over there. It's a mafiosa state. So, yeah, I do think Trump is involved in that. We'll never know otherwise until he releases or his records are subpoenaed. And you saw last week that a Democratic move, the weak Democrats' move to get those tax returns was rebuffed, an overwhelming Republican vote to know he could keep it quiet.
Barbara?
I really don't have much to add to this, except that it certainly is a huge mess. And it's just so, like, everything is pointing to what we think it is.
Yep.
I mean, that's a good point. Let me move on to, let's take a break now, if we can, Rob. Let's take a break. Natural. When we come back, I want to get into the Betsy DeVos and the choice and talk about that. And that subject, and we'll get to some letters as well. We'll be right back after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York, specializing in search engine optimization and internet marketing since 1996, mannixmarketing.com. The Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies, Millbrook, New York. Freshwater ecologist David Strayer presenting a lecture on our planet's inland waters and the rich diversity of life that they support. March 10th, 7 p.m., careyinstitute.org.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. There was an, an op-ed in the New York Times this morning, which says that Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, deserved the hammering she received for her widely reviled comments characterizing historically black colleges and universities as early examples of school choice. But when it comes to the fate of HBCUs under the Trump administration, her apparent misunderstanding of their history is a distraction. The fate of these institutions in the coming years will hinge not on her words, but on her decisions about their funding. In February, after only a few days on the job, Ms. DeVos made headlines for visiting Howard University, a historically black college founded in 1867. Then, after a meeting with HBCU leaders Monday, she released a statement calling HBCUs the real pioneers when it comes to school choice. That description was widely criticized as a dishonest attempt to distance these institutions from the segregated past that necessitated them and to awkwardly reposition them as talking points for the school choice movement. But her misguided remarks have diverted attention away from something more urgent. She now oversees the federal agency that is responsible for roughly three-quarters of the annual federal revenue to HBCUs in ways that are much more consequential than any statement she could make. This power will allow her to determine how the schools fare under the Trump administration. Barbara, I'll start with you.
Yeah, this is actually an op-ed by an individual and not from the editorial board of the New York Times. I point that out because
Ivory Tolson.
Yeah, I actually have some issues or at least another point of view. I think it's very important to look at where is the money and following the money and the fact that she does have so much say-so over this, the dispensation of funds, unlike the White House, where this initiative has been moved to. But I also think it's really important to call out when someone in this administration or wherever else these such people or such statements might come from, that when you completely erase the history of the United States in relationship to racism and white supremacy. So I don't think it's an either-or thing. I think, yes, we should really look at the fact that she has all this power over, and her department has all this power over whether there will be continued adequate funding for the HBCUs, which do indeed educate disproportionate numbers of African American and other students who otherwise might not be able to succeed in higher education. They do an incredible job. They have a formula and a game plan that other institutions look at and say, how do they do that? You know, these students come with an adequate, not necessarily adequate, prior preparation from their, their primary and secondary school, and yet they turn out accomplished professionals. How do they do that? So, as I said, the HBCUs do something incredibly important and needed in this society for her to erase the origin story of the schools, I think is really wrong because people in this country are so confused about how did that happen and what does that mean for her to put it into school choice? Please, give me a break. So I see it's not either or. Both of those things are important.
I'm still thinking about what you said yesterday when we were discussing this issue, Rosemary, which is, you know, this is what happens when you hire people who aren't qualified for the job.
Yeah. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I'm unclear on whether she's just so frankly dumb she didn't know, or if is it part and parcel with, it's not the only origin story that this administration has been trying to erase. If you remember the Holocaust memorial speech, we left out Jews out of the Holocaust.
Exactly.
Oh, a lot of people suffered was the line we got. So what you're saying holds water, but with DeVos, I truly don't know which it is. Perhaps it's both.
I think that's a plausible explanation for what she said that was so incredibly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite possible, because one of the points that I make as a person who is an educator whose field is African-American studies and has been for a few decades now, one of the things that I say is that it's very hard to get accurate information about these matters in conventional, our usual mm-hmm. classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So when people don't know about something, my perspective generally is not to fault them, particularly if they're open to learning and knowing, because it's like, where would you have gotten that? You're not going to get it from TV.
Yeah.
You're not going to get it from your just regular, you know,
where
ordinary
would Betsy
classroom.
Have gotten it, Barbara?
Exactly.
Where would Betsy have ever
yes.
heard anything other than...
That's what I'm saying. Sitting around the billionaire's dinner table.
She's never been inside a public school except that one she had a fight into.
Ordinary public school, you don't necessarily get nuanced perspectives about the histories of people who have been marginalized in this country. You just don't. So,
Alan?
Yes. I agree with both of them.
All right.
They're both right. I mean, you know, this woman is trying to destroy public education in the United States. I don't know that she knows she's trying to, but she sure is trying to do that. I think, you know, every utterance that she makes has to be investigated in terms of how you lead to the ultimate goal of killing our public schools.
So this is one where we'll wait and see, right?
Yeah.
It's a huge amount of disrespect. One of the things that we can ways we can look at her distortion of the reasons for historically black colleges and universities to exist is that it falls into the bucket of one more diss of the black community coming out of this administration. I mean, they get the facts wrong. They say things that are not true. You know, our communities are hellscapes and mm-hmm. nothing but crime and blah, 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 blah. I mean, so many ways that they show that they have no consciousness and no caring.
Plus the plantation mentality that only I can help you. What, take a chance on me. I mean, that's got to offend you a little. It offends me.
Let's go to some letters, and we will continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Claire says, maybe Sessions is not forgetful but senile. He is not that young and could be having this problem. Either that or he is a bold-faced liar. Huh. Dan says, please comment on
to which I wrote back, or both.
Dan says, please comment on Mr. Trump's comment that the death of the Navy SEAL was not on him, but the generals in a raid originally planned during the Obama administration. So not my responsibility. Isn't the commander-in-chief supposed to take responsibility no matter what?
Yes. This is a man who doesn't take blame ever. And not only did he not take the blame, he then brings his widow, the senior chief's widow, into that horrible display where she's a woman in pain and suffering. He's done that before. He did that with the woman whose son died in the Benghazi raid, too, and then puts them on display sobbing and gnashing of their teeth. It's just
I missed this.
Awful.
This happened a few days ago.
At his congressional speech.
At the speech.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. Yeah.
Well, she had her there.
I skipped that.
Oh, it was pitiful. And now social media is filled with all the attacks on liberals who are criticizing the widow. So let me make it plain. I am not criticizing the widow. All she wanted to do was to have the President of the United States honor the sacrifice of her husband. Completely understandable. But she was used. She was totally used.
Exploited.
Yes.
By a man who didn't accept responsibility.
Yeah. To get back to it. I'm sorry. Just to get back to the original question Joe asked us.
Alan?
Well, this morning there's something interesting going on. The Trump people must know that they have been subjected to a lot of criticism about the death of this fine young man. One of the things that they're doing now is really ramping up arrests of Al-Qaeda and others and saying, implying at least, that the information they got was from that raid.
Yes, that it was, quote-unquote, worth it in a military sense. because they received, got all these laptops and all of this information in the help to further their military goal. Back to the letters. Tina writes, Barbara is absolutely right. Sessions is chilling for a variety of reasons, not at least of which is his lie about meeting with the Russians. His good old boy act turned my stomach. We know exactly what he represents. I'm with Alan, says Barbara. The Russians are laughing their heads off. They have duped the Trump administration. And Maggie says Mike Pence has admitted to using a private email account for official business while governor of Indiana. Why is it when a Democrat does it, it is an unelectable offense, but it is not for a Republican? Hypocrisy much?
Well, the whole email thing.
Lock them up.
Yeah, the whole email thing with Hillary was, as many people you heard Libby and I say it over and over again, a nothing scandal. And this just proves it. It isn't a big deal. It isn't a big deal that Pence did it. It isn't a big deal that Hillary did it. Bernie Sanders had it right. We're sick of your email scandals. Let's move on.
Richard writes, the Bishops' Council of the African Methodist Episcopal Church has called the actions of the Trump administration demonic and has asked its members to engage their Congress members and senators to express oppositions to specific policies. Sometimes you call a thing what it is.
And I just have to say, thank you. And when... You know, I said you had to have been there. I was really talking about my cultural frame of reference and background. So the fact that the bishops from an African-American denomination use the term demonic, that's where I was coming from. That's really where I was coming from. And that's why I said you had to have been there, because I didn't think I could explain, you know, in 30 words or less. You know?
Right.
Why I use that term to talk about people who are not doing the right thing.
Let's move on to another issue that I wanted to talk about, and that is health care. And so the Teresa yesterday was talking about, of course, giving us the update as to how this has been an issue, and because it doesn't really seem to be a plan. And now Rand Paul is protesting outside of the room where Republicans are, where House Republicans are
holding secret enclave to write it up.
And he is now, his plan has issues. We have issues, right? There are issues there too. However, the point that he is making, that this is a closed process and nobody seems to know what's going on, and we have a plan, but we're not going to share the plan. Eventually, they're going to have to share the plan, and I'm curious as to what you all make of that, and especially with someone who ran against President Trump just a year ago, of coming up and saying, okay, but what is it? Alan, what do you make of the Rand Paul protest?
Well, I've been pretty forthright on this. I've watched in the New York State Legislature where they put hot bills down on people's desks before they can have a chance to read them under a so-called message of necessity. In the House of Representatives, it's the same thing. It is an autocracy. It's run by one person sitting at the top of the thing. There used to be divisions of power in the House of Representatives, but there isn't anymore. It all comes from the top. And the idea is, we promised, we kept saying we were going to do it. We were going to do it, but we're not going to do it. And we're not going to tell you till the day before we put it on the floor. But you know what? If they get some opposition, real opposition from the Senate, it may well be that they're going to have go back to the future. Or back to the past, and say, well, this is what we were doing all along. We kept passing these fixes that we knew weren't going to pass, and maybe that's what's happening here.
Hard to say, since the door is closed and they're not even letting all Republicans see it. They're afraid of a leak. The last time a preliminary plan was circulated, it got out to the newspapers. That's how bad the leaks are right now. So it's hard to say. You may be right. I think they're fumbling. I don't think they're going to come anywhere close to the many promises they have made to come out with a program that will cost less, do more, make everybody in the entire country break out and dance. It just isn't going to happen. So what they're doing is keeping until the very end the details over which we will be most anguished and cause the most trouble. It's sort of like when you should call your mother and tell you you're going to be late, but you don't call because you don't want to get yelled at, and so you keep putting it off and putting it off until the very last minute. You take all the yelling at once. I think that's what they're doing.
It is a very strange process where the House Energy and Commerce Committee's bill is being kept in a dedicated reading room.
Yeah.
Under lock and key. And Bloomberg is reporting this, where it will be available to members of the panel ahead of a markup. The move, as you mentioned, is an effort to prevent leaks. And GOP leaders say the bill will be released once it is final. So that's good to know.
It's good, yeah. They could have passed a secret law and they tell us how much to pay and we wouldn't know what we got covered. Yeah, why not?
They'll release it before it's done.
We'll be happier that way. We won't know how messed up we really are.
I don't understand. Why does he refer to this revised version as an Obamacare bill? Why is that? Am I missing something?
Because their line, Barbara, their spin is that Obamacare is such a disaster. Mm-hmm. It's imploding. And we Republicans have to save people. We have to jump in and fix it, rescue them.
No, I understand that. But
so,
it says
the Obamacare bill.
I have been told that the House Obamacare bill. Oh, so they're talking about the revision they're referring to as the Obamacare bill.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Rand Paul says, I will not vote. This is from a day ago. Said, I will not vote for Obamacare Lite, nor will many of my colleagues.
Okay.
So he's still saying that it's really not being dismantled in the way they said
now
it was
I
going
understand,
to be.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. Ray Graff is ready for news, and we will go over to that in a moment. We welcome your letters. We have a lot more to discuss. You can send your letters to panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Barbara Smith join us this morning. We will continue our lively conversation after this. Well, it's the end of the week. We've tackled a lot of big topics this week. We have 20 minutes left in the panel, so why don't we take a moment to lighten it up and talk about how our planet is melting.
As witnessed,
why are we laughing?
Witnessed by the warmest February on record. Right?
On record. Mm-hmm. So this article from the New York Times: the White House is fiercely divided over President Trump's campaign promise to cancel the Paris Agreement, the 2015 accord that binds nearly every country to curb global warming, with more moderate voices maintaining that he should stick with the agreement despite his campaign pledge. Okay, so Stephen Bannon, the senior advisor to Donald Trump, is pressing the president to officially pull the United States from the landmark accord, according to energy and government officials with knowledge of the debate. But they say he is clashing with Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, and the president's own daughter, Ivanka Trump, who fear the move could have broad and damaging diplomatic ramifications. Should we read into the fact that it's more about diplomatic ramifications than it is about scientific ramifications? But that is another issue for another day. Mr. Trump vowed on the campaign trail to tear up President Barack Obama's global warming policies. And on the home front, he is moving aggressively to meet those pledges with deep cuts to the Environmental Protection Agency and a new EPA administrator, Scott Pruitt, who is a skeptic of climate science. Next week, Mr. Trump plans to sign an executive order directing Mr. Pruitt to start the lengthy legal process of unwinding Mr. Obama's EPA regulations for cutting greenhouse pollutions from coal-fired power plants. Those regulations are the linchpin of the last administration's program to meet the nation's obligations to reduce climate emissions under the Paris Agreement. Who wants the first shot?
Well, I was going to say how ironic. Oh. Yeah.
No, go.
I was going to say how ironic it is to have all this discussion about something that is so critical to the future of the entire globe. And it's a discussion, as you pointed out, among people with political interests. No scientists need apply. It's terrible. It's terrible.
Well, if you look at it, the fate of the planet is in Ivanka's hands. The fashion designer's hands. How much does daddy really love her? Okay, honey, I'll save the planet for you.
You know, he is, Barbara's earlier comment about devils and demonic, you know, some people saw that as over the line. But in this case, it is, that attribution is not over the line. We're talking about the planet. We are talking about our grandchildren. We're talking about clean water. We're talking about a time when we used to have white masks on our faces because of the incredible smog in places like New York City, which are gone now, and this guy wants to reverse it. Now, is that not devilish or demonic? I think it is.
I would agree, and we were talking during one of the breaks about Ivanka's role, and I said, yes, and she has his grandchildren. I mean, does she say to him, Dad, you know, if we don't maintain some level of safety with the environment and around all of these, polluting, et cetera, issues, if we don't maintain something, your little grandchildren who you claim to love, they're not going to have a world in which there's air to breathe, even though they are wealthy and white.
Okay, and worse than Ivanka, when I think about this, that the fate of the world is in Ivanka, it's in the hands of Rex Tillerson. Let us remember what he was doing a month ago. He was running one of the largest energy companies in the world, and negotiating with the Russians too for oil fields. This is not encouraging. It is not encouraging at all. And what's with Rex Tillerson? How come he never talks? He's like this big, lurking presence. He talks to foreign governments and says everything that you heard from Donald Trump isn't really true. Here's what we really think, and that's it. We've not heard from him. He doesn't even have a deputy. Doesn't have a real department. There's looking at 37% cuts. Do we have a State Department anymore? Or do we just eliminate that because we didn't like Hillary?
I think you're really pointing to something that's very important. I don't think Tillerson has clout. I think Ivanka does, but I don't think Tillerson has clout, and that's why you're not hearing from him, because he's sort of outside this inner sanctum of well, Barbara might put, no, let's forget that term.
Yes,
I love.
Yeah.
this inner sanctum of the real power mongers in this relationship. And Tillerson's outside. You know, this is not the first time. I know that FDR, for example, did not want to include his striped pants boys in his negotiations, and they felt really left out. So presidents have in the past conducted their own foreign policy and their own policy. In this case, it's pretty dangerous. It's pretty dangerous.
Seriously.
What might have some influence are the generals. He does seem to listen to his assorted generals. And climate change is very much a national security matter. Outside of the science, there's repeated studies that show pressure for declining resources. Ooh, that sounds like an Allen line. But pressure to hang on to resources like water and viable cropland, all aggravated and scarcity made worse by climate change, are causing problems. The Syrian conflict has a base in climate-caused scarcity. So this is no small thing, and it is not a matter of ideology. Oh, Barbara, what Barbara said is the most important. This is freaking science. It doesn't matter if you're conservative or liberal. We're all affected by this.
All right.
I mean, the idea that you would put coal dust into streams, for example.
Right. Yeah, did people...
There's a good idea.
Go on, Alan. Sorry.
And allow that... Yeah, I'm sorry. And allow that to happen... Just speaks to, okay, so now you're a coal miner. You got 5 grandchildren, all of whom need clean water and want to take it out of a stream. And now you're going to pollute that stream. It seems beyond anything I can truly comprehend.
I want to read a couple of letters and then we'll move on to some other topics. Allie writes, last Friday, when major news organizations were banned from the White House press briefings, I emailed 6 moderate Republicans asking for verbal condemnation. Please explain to us the why, accepting re-election, are moderate Republicans remaining silent regarding Sessions, release of the taxes, etc.? Why? Alan, I'll give you that one.
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. It's a very good question and very disappointing that people who do see themselves as moderates, we have 2 in our district, Lee Stefanik and John Faso, are not coming out, really fighting on this stuff, because a lot of people elected them figuring that these were centrists, these were people who would decide between right and wrong, and now you write them and you ask a question and you don't get anything back, and they go along. Is it that they're just scared of Trump? I just don't really get it. I mean, I've talked on this program before, you know, about former Republican congresspeople who would go out and do battle with Dick Nixon or anybody else simply because it was right and we were depending on them to do this. This does seem to be that these folks are acting really timidly. And I think in the end, the only thing I can think of is that they're scared to death of Trump.
Why, what could he do to them?
You know, there's a Neustadt wrote a book, I believe it was Neustadt, in which he quoted something Rosemary called the law of anticipated reaction. And what that means is, as I'm sure you understand, is it isn't that you ask a great question, what could he do to them? Well, in the middle of the night at 1 o'clock, you think of a lot of things they could do to him. You know, you're sitting up and you're saying, oh, he could really kill me. He could do this to me. He could take my campaign funds away. He could put up a primary opponent against me. I mean, it doesn't seem logical the next morning, but that is what we mean by the law of anticipated reaction. You make up stuff that you're afraid he could do to you.
Yeah, it is striking how few Republicans are willing to, you know, look beyond just their own narrow interests. There's Lindsey Graham and John McCain, and that's limited, and Susan Collins, and sometimes Lisa Murkowski. Have I missed anyone? No.
No.
And there's a lot of them. Where? Really?
Well, we
all
did hear
the
from Rand Paul earlier.
Yeah, Rand Paul always has listened to his own drummer, and I sort of admire that. Even though I don't agree with him on a lot of things, he did some things standing up to Democrats that I thought were great, like great calling out our drone warfare, mostly subterfuge carried out in subterfuge before he brought it to our attention. But yeah, that's still a handful.
I want to move on. There's another story here that I think is interesting. It's an NPR poll that was released this morning. There was a great bit of debate that came in after the president's speech on Tuesday night in regards to his the flow of drugs into this country and talking about illegal drugs coming in. And many people instantly jumped on the president and said, okay, but you are completely missing the fact that the great deal of the drug problem now is coming from our medicine cabinets and prescription drugs as opposed to what is coming in from other countries. So there's a new poll out. Prescribed narcotic painkillers continue to fuel a nationwide opioid epidemic. Nearly half of fatal overdoses in the United States involve opioids prescribed by a doctor. But people don't seem to be avoiding the medications despite the well-documented risks. In the latest NPR Truven Health Analytics poll, over half of people surveyed, or 57%, say they had been prescribed a narcotic painkiller like Percocet or Vicodin or morphine at some point. That's an increase of 3% since the question was asked in 2014, where it was 54%, and of 7% since the 2011 poll, which is a 50% jump, which is really high, obviously. For almost three-quarters of poll participants, 74%, the prescription was for temporary acute pain, like from a broken arm or a dental procedure. Alan, I'll throw you into this.
Or an ankle.
Or an ankle, right. 19% said they received the drugs for chronic pain. Ron Osmanowski, who is vice president of cognitive analytics in the value-based care pillar at IBM Watson Health, I hope he has a large business card to cover that title, says the drugs are like a two-edged sword. They're great for people who really need them for heavy-duty pain, but they come with addiction, risk, and side effects. Indeed, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention note that as many as 1 in 4 people who use opioid painkillers get addicted to them. But despite the drug's reputation for addiction, less than a third of the people, 29%, said that they questioned or refused their doctor's prescriptions for opioids. That hasn't changed much since 2014.
Well, I could have had them, and I, of course, said no. And I think that's correct. I think a lot of people are being warned by their doctors that this can be lead to addictive behavior. And on the other hand, I have other concerns. I'll get myself into more trouble than I deserve. I think I deserve. And, you know, I brought my – at one point I had been given some opioids and I didn't use them, and I took them to the police station. And I said, can I have a receipt, please? Because they're supposed to go – we don't give out receipts. Hmm. That's the end of my commentary.
I had back surgery. I got a big old bottle of really strong drugs, and I used every one of them and asked for more. So I hate that because and I'm not addicted. I'm not using them now. A year later, I'm fine. I don't even take Tylenol now. Thank you, doctor. However, I mean, what's at stake here is that we're trying to make laws to prevent people from becoming addicted that could actually hurt people who need those drugs. What a good time to defang the FDA, right? Once again, Barbara, this is the same thing where doctors and medical people ought to be dealing with this, coming up with a way to get these drugs to people who really need them and
science?
For which they are designed. Mm. Science. And get the politicians out of it. Yes, drug addiction is a terrible problem, but the politicians are not going to be solving it, I suspect.
Complicated. One of the things that
yes.
I think is different, like there's a difference between chronic pain and like...
acute pain.
Well, yes. And yes, acute short would term. Be like short you had term, surgery, yeah. et cetera. Yeah, because having recently had oral surgery myself, I didn't take any. I had it left over from the first time, you know. I took two the first time and none the second time. So, but that's just me. I think it is an issue that medical personnel and scientific personnel should indeed be the leaders on and not you know, people using it like a tennis ball back and forth for their
I remember the controversy a few years ago was the opposite way, that people who are dying, who are in excruciating pain from terminal cancer and other type things,
right.
were being denied drugs
right.
because we didn't want them addicted. You might be addicted, you know, the week before you died. And so mm-hmm. we have this, because of the politics, we make crazy policies that have nothing to do with medicine. Stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but the political apparatus is supposed to make intelligent decisions. Because they don't, Rosemary, can you really hold them responsible and say that the politicians shouldn't really be touching this stuff? I think, in fact, that's their job. And if you find kids getting addicted, right, if you find kids getting addicted, you want to do something about that. And we do know that the heroin epidemic was closely tied to an awful lot of people taking opioids.
Yes.
So it does call for some kind of adjudication.
I see the point. I don't think it's from the prescribing of drugs to people who need it that's the problem. It's that drugs are going illegally from into the distribution system to people who don't need them. So that's a...
That's true, but I think you may be wrong, which is that an awful lot of people who do take them do get addicted. And I think that is something that the doctors warn you about. I have no reason to disbelieve them about that. Now, some people have some extra stuff, and they start to sell it or they start to give it away, and it does get into the system. That would make you right about that. But I do think
right.
that there are people who do genuinely get addicted.
Well, again, that's a medical problem. If your pain is so acute that you have become addicted to drugs, you see doctors to wean you off of them. It the part about selling them, it's like, you know, the drugs you had left over, Barbara,
mm-hmm.
instead of keeping them in your medicine
mm-hmm.
chest. If
mm-hmm.
you had sold them, when I had that giant bottle of OxyContin, if I'd gone to campus and sold them, I'd be a rich woman now. I also should be in jail for that.
Right,
and
right.
that's the act that seems to be...
Or
the
not.
Or not. anyway, I think illegal distribution of drugs that have been prescribed to you is one thing. That's a crime. Prescribing the drugs to people who need them, the doctor's prerogative, the pharmacist's prerogative,
yes.
is a whole different matter. And we're conflating them.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have... opioid prescribing guidelines. They were released in March of last year. The guidelines recommend trying non-narcotic medications or treatment first. lay out recommendations for when to prescribe the drugs, how to choose the appropriate painkiller and dosage, and how to assess the risks. The guidelines are intended for primary care physicians and not for those, as you mentioned a moment ago, Rosemary, for those treating patients in end-of-life care or with cancer. The problem is it appears that even with the newness of those guidelines, they don't seem to be being adhered to. Alan? Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a third area, Joe, that you're not mentioning, and that is emergency rooms.
Right.
I mean, people go to emergency rooms, and they're in great pain. They've busted their ankle or busted their arm or done something like that. And quite frankly, a sympathetic doctor is going to warn you, which is what happened with me, that this stuff can be addictive. But on the other hand, what are they supposed to do? But the thing about emergency rooms is you don't come back. Now you go to your other doctor. And by that time, so the emergency room who is giving you the stuff is not responsible for following up to make sure that you're using it wisely, right?
Right. I mean, but these guidelines are supposed to cover that as well, of laying out the recommendations for how, to give the weakest drug first and then find the appropriate painkiller and to assess the risks and in a perfect world, also keeping in mind all the other stuff that you may be taking as well, which I don't know how often that's done either.
Well, you know, I don't know how close we are to the end, but I can tell you this much. This has been one of the best programs ever because with what between Barbara talking about the characteristics of the people in the administration and Rosemary talking about how she could be a rich person. Now, I have a lot to walk away with.
I have a lot to walk away with. Excellent. Well, you can walk, right? You have a walking cast? Is that?
I can walk very good. I can walk, but and it hurts.
Yeah.
And I am only complaining because I think it helps to complain.
Do I have time to mention a couple of things coming up next week?
You have 30 seconds.
On Tuesday at Albany Law School, Kianga Yamada Taylor, author of From Black Lives Matter to Black Liberation, will be speaking at 4 o'clock. Check the Albany Law School website. On Wednesday, International Women's Day, there will be an action in Townsend Park in Albany, a women's strike that I've been working on.
Excellent. So a lot going on, and you can find out more. Thanks to Alan, thanks to Rosemary, and thanks to Barbara. Have a beautiful weekend, and we will continue our program after this.